Welcome to the Living a Naturally Healthy Life podcast with Delaine ND, the podcast for people looking to correct chronic illnesses such as diabetes through lifestyle change. I'm Dr. Delaine Vaughn. As a physician, I see many patients who are ill because of lifestyle decisions such as food choices. Typically, diseases such as diabetes are managed with pills or injections. This approach creates a vicious, expensive, and unhealthy cycle of medication and then more medication to address the negative side effects. As a physician and a life coach, I work with clients to resolve their diseases, get off their medications, and live a naturally healthy life. If you don't like the healthcare system in America, I recommend you use less of it by being naturally healthy. So if you feel there has to be a better, more natural way to live a healthy life, you are in the right place. Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. So, we're going to get started, but I want to warn you, my voice is a little raspy. I actually just got back from a coaching mastermind in Dallas with the coaching certification school that I certified with. It was 2 days of a combination of learning and getting inspired. It was almost a retreat-like atmosphere. So I was with my coaching peers and it was really energizing and a blast. I mean, an experience I can't even put into words, but let me tell you something about the words, what it's done to my words. My voice is so raspy. I don't know if it was sleeping in the hotel and maybe it was dry, or maybe I had some allergy to something that was growing in Dallas. I don't know. I sound like I've picked up a smoking habit though. I have not. I'm trying to nurse it with a little warm tea, so beware. So if you guys remember my last podcast, we talked about sugar and why we crave it fortnightly. In the words of Mike Myers. Hopefully you've had the chance and taken the opportunity to watch the 93-minute movie of So I Married an Axe Murderer, where you can get the full impact of the quote via Mike Myers. But if you haven't, that's fine. I totally get it. We're all busy, but it's still totally worth your time. In that podcast, though, we discussed the biochemistry and the neurochemistry of why we crave sugar and processed foods that make us sick with things like diabetes. So today I want to give you a tool and talk about a way that you can use to process these urges in a way that allows you to gain control over them and doesn't lead to complying with the urge. So before we jump into that process that I'm going to explain, I want to talk about feelings and sensations. When we discuss the steps for processing an urge, it's really important to distinguish between these two, between feelings and sensations. In common vernacular, we use these terms interchangeably, and that's totally fine. But when I teach this concept, I like to clearly distinguish between the two so that we can know what we're talking about in specific situations. So I define a feeling as a vibration that we perceive in our bodies. This vibration, these vibrations that we perceive in our bodies are caused by thoughts that start in our brains. Versus a sensation, which I define as something we experience using our five senses, taste, smell, hear, touch, or see. Feelings we will frequently assign to parts of our bodies. Versus sensations we actually experience in our bodies and they travel up nerves and they're interpreted by our brains. So feelings start in our brains and are assigned to our bodies. Sensations start in our bodies, travel to our brains where they're interpreted. Examples of this. Feelings. One, my dog dies. So that's not your feeling, that's the circumstance that's happening, right? Your thought is, man, I'm going to miss that dog. Your feeling is sadness. And we frequently assign this to like our chest and we call it heartbroken. So I'm heartbroken that my dog's died. This is how that looks, right? And we say that we're feeling this aching in our chest, but the chest is not generating that feeling. That's all coming from a thought in your brain. So an example of a sensation, I've put my hand down. Nerves in my hand called nociceptors fire off a message that's carried to my brain, and my brain interprets this message as, holy hell, that's hot, stop touching your curling iron. That's a sensation. It was initiated in my hand, in my body, and it was carried up to my brain where it was interpreted. So I use these definitions. I think they're very important to help you determine when you're having true hunger versus when you're having urges and cravings. Please recognize that I understand that some feelings and some sensations are similar. My favorite example of that is tired. I can be sick and tired of something, and that's totally a feeling, right, that starts in my brain. I'm sick and tired of my son leaving the toilet seat up. Or I can be physically exhausted. That's a sensation. that I feel in my body as tired and fatigued. But many of our feelings and emotions are very clearly thought-generated feelings versus body-generated sensations. A lot of times we experience urges and cravings, but we believe that they're true hunger. So practicing the skill of determining the difference between these two is very imperative to learning how to stop eating foods that cause us to be sick. So now we're going to talk about the difference between true hunger and cravings and urges, okay? So true hunger is a sensation, right? So it's that sensation that starts in our body. It's carried by a set of nerves up to our brain. Then our brain interprets it's time to eat. So by this definition, true hunger never happens 20 minutes after you've eaten something, or even an hour really after you've eaten something. The way our stomach empties food, it just doesn't work that way. When we eat a meal, it takes 2.5 to 3 hours to empty 50% of that food that we've eaten. So that means at like 3 hours, there's still half of your meal hanging around in your stomach. You're not starving. You're not truly hungry. It takes about 4 to 5 hours to completely empty your stomach of all of its contents. In fact, it takes about 40 hours total for a meal to travel start to finish through our body. In one meal, that impact of fullness in your stomach is there for about 4 to 5 hours. But even when it's traveling through our intestines and our gut, we're still getting fullness signals during that time period. So when people start to feel hunger after the emptying of our stomach varies from individual to individual. But what that specific number is for you, you're going to have to hash out for yourself. What I will tell you, it's not within a few hours of a meal. So if you've eaten recently in the last 2 to 3 hours, the thought of being hungry is probably not really true hunger. It's probably more related to a craving or an urge. So remember, cravings and urges, they start in your brain. Typically, there's a thought that's associated with this, like, my boss didn't seem to really appreciate my work today, and M&Ms are delicious. Or I'd love to have some chocolate cake at my son's birthday party. Or this football game is a blast, and what would make it even better is pizza and wings, right? So there's always this thought process associated with it. Then your brain, in the interest of procuring these foods, assigns a feeling. And again, this feeling comes from these thoughts, but they assign it to a part in your body. Sometimes I feel it in my throat. Sometimes I feel it in my stomach. Sometimes I feel it in my chest. Sometimes I've even noticed it as body aches. So remember, when we eat foods, especially foods like M&M's, chocolate cake or pizza, our brain releases dopamine that makes us feel good. So if we feel bad, one of the easiest ways that we have in the modern day to make ourselves feel better is by getting food. And our brain can be very resourceful and clever in getting us to do something to get these feel-good neurotransmitter hits that the brain wants. Being aware of the difference between true hunger and cravings and urges is the first step in learning to process the craving and urge without eating foods that make us sick with diabetes. I teach my clients a couple generalizations or characteristics to determine between true hunger and cravings or urges. So true hunger for me, and you'll have to see what it looks like for you, but for me, almost always involves a growling in my stomach. There is an emptiness in my stomach. There's actually an entire series of things that I use. You know, how do I feel when I drink water on an empty stomach? It's very, very different than how I feel when I drink 8 ounces of water on a full stomach. And typically that will produce this growling sensation and this growling even noise in my stomach. So versus cravings and urges, they're usually associated with some kind of emotional discomfort. True hunger is usually not food specific. Bland baked chicken would likely satisfy. So baked chicken and broccoli would probably be something you would be thrilled to eat if you were truly hungry. If you think of somebody who's truly starving, a kid from a third world country who's truly starving, they're going to be stoked to have baked chicken and broccoli, right? Versus cravings and urges, they are very food specific. Only M&Ms will do. Only cake will do. Only nachos. That's the only thing I want. Only Twizzlers. That's all that will make this feeling go away. Only something very specific will satisfy a craving. So if you find that, gosh, I'm truly hungry, I'm going to eat my lunch of almonds and eggs, and you eat your lunch, gosh, I'm still very hungry. Man, those Twizzlers look really good. then you'll start to realize, when you start to just be more aware, you'll start to realize, no, the whole time I just wanted the Twizzlers that were in the candy drawer at work. I told myself I was truly hungry, but even when I ate a reasonable meal, that wasn't satisfying to me. So another characteristic of true hunger is that it comes on in waves. It comes in ebbs and flows. You'll feel maybe this growling in your stomach. That's what I feel. Maybe I'll have a big glass of water. Maybe I'm busy at work and I don't have time to eat quite yet. That feeling will pass. Maybe 15, 20 minutes, it'll pass. Maybe, and then it'll come back maybe in 45 minutes. You know, maybe it'll hang around for 10 minutes, but then it will pass. So cravings and urges, on the other hand, come on very abruptly, almost as abruptly as your anger with that driver who cut you off in traffic. And then it grows into a feeling that's almost frenzied, okay? I want to talk to you a little bit about how we usually tolerate and manage cravings and urges, and then kind of how I recommend that my clients manage cravings and urges. So first, we do one of three things. We try to resist the cravings and the urges. We try to avoid the cravings and the urges. And then the third option for how to manage cravings and urges is what I recommend to my clients. We just allow them. We resist them in a number of different ways, but usually we rely on willpower to do this. We feel like if we can willpower our way through the urge to eat something we shouldn't, or through the craving of something that's not on plan for us, then we can just hold out and white knuckle it until it passes. And I'm sure many of us have had some success with this, but eventually we get broken down. So here's the thing about willpower. They're starting to see this, and social scientists are starting to do a lot of research on this. And what they're realizing is that willpower is fatigable. It wears out, just like a muscle. If you think about the biochemistry of a muscle fiber, when a muscle fiber fires off what we call as action potential, it then has a refractory period where it has to regenerate that action potential. During that refractory period, that muscle fiber cannot contract again. I like to describe this as thinking about a classroom full of children, right? When the children are in the room, they can do learning. When they go to change rooms, maybe go to the music room, maybe go to the art room and do, you know, what they call specials in school, during that period, when they're in the hallway passing, they can't do learning in that period, right? They're chaotic. They're moving from place to place. Their brains aren't focused. That's not when they're doing learning. That period, that what we call passing period, that's what is like that refractory period, right? You just can't do what you need to do in that period. It's just not how it works. When the kids come back into the room, and they sit down and they're all paying attention to the teacher, that's when that action potential and that muscle fiber has been reestablished and it can be fired again. So willpower is like this. It will work, and then you'll hit a refractory period where it no longer works and you don't have any way of tolerating and managing these urges and cravings. So some of us have had really great results with willpower. I'm not saying it doesn't work. Yes, it will work for a while, but it's inconsistent and it's not permanent. And inevitably, most people find that although they may willpower for so many hours, that inevitably they do comply with these urges and cravings. So the second way that we deal with it is through avoidance. We avoid it. Many folks do this. Again, many folks get a lot of really great results with avoidance. But this is one of those other things that typically we do it for so long and then we just comply with the urge. So what this looks like is I want a Twix bar, but I'm going to go ahead and clean the bathroom. The bathroom's clean. I still want a Twix bar. I'm going to go ahead and clean the front room. Front room's clean, dusted, swept, everything. Okay, I still want the Twix bar. I'm going to go clean the guest room closet. I still want the Twix bar. Well, the only thing left to clean is the kitchen, which I was kind of trying to avoid because you know what's in the kitchen, the Twix bars. But you go in there and you clean it. And during all of this time that you've been trying to avoid that emotion because we see that emotion as uncomfortable, that craving is uncomfortable, while we've been trying to avoid it, we're having this banter in our brain where we learn to justify, or we bring up justifications on why we deserve the Twix bar, or we bring up rationalizations about why it's okay for us to eat the Twix bar. And before you know it, when you're cleaning the kitchen, you're either eating the Twix bar or you're in the pantry with a bag of tortilla chips or you've finished a bag of Oreo cookies. I like to look at avoiding my urges and cravings like how I would handle it if a thief was in my house. So a thief has the potential of robbing you of your valuables. Cravings have the potential of robbing you of your goals, of your health goals, of what's possible for you to be healthy, right? I look at these two as the same. If there was a thief in my house, say there's a plumbing company that I'm using that's new, my other plumber that I trust, they're booked for 2 weeks, but I really need somebody to come in and look at the bathroom plumbing because something's going wrong. If I see this plumber and either I know they're somehow I have the knowledge that they're a thief or they just look really sketchy to me, I'm not going to avoid that person in my house, right? I'm going to like look and see where they're at because I know they might possibly take something that's valuable to me. I like to look at cravings in the same way. I know that this could rob me of achieving my goals, so I'm going to keep an eye on it. I'm not going to avoid it, because if I avoid it, if you avoided a thief in your house, you wouldn't know if they were in your room taking your grandmother's pearls, right? So I look at the avoidance similarly to a thief in my house. I don't want to avoid it. I want to know what it's doing, because that's the only way I can be sure that it's not robbing me of my goals. So the last way, and this is a way that most of us are not very practiced at doing, but certainly what I recommend for my clients when they have urges and cravings or really any other feeling, this is how I recommend that they learn to process it and allow it. So this is a way of dealing with cravings and urges that does not deplete. You don't hide from it. This is a way of dealing with it where you just allow them to be, not complying with them and not making them awful and horrible by labeling them as painful or depriving. So there are some phrases that I like to use in the moment to acknowledge what's going on, to kind of slow myself down. So I'll have a craving. I know I need to acknowledge that that's what's going on. So these are some of the phrases I use and have used in the past. So one of the phrases and my thoughts in my brain that I go to is, this is just one of those times when I want to eat M&Ms, even though that's not on plan for me. Or this is one of those times where I want to splurge and overeat. Or this is one of those times where my mind offers me options that don't serve my bigger goals. Another similar thought to that one is, it's okay for me to be uncomfortable on purpose for a bigger purpose when my bigger purpose is my health goals. Today, I'm going to choose to be uncomfortable on purpose so I can achieve my bigger health goals. Or another thought I use, this is the time when I crave M&Ms, but I know I'm not really hungry. I'm just irritated or maybe annoyed or tired or even sometimes happy. It's okay that I feel that way. I don't have to eat the M&Ms, and the M&Ms aren't really going to change it. Or one of my super favorites, this too shall pass. Knowing that all feelings, good, bad, bored, terrified, hungry, craving M&Ms, all of this will pass. This is a feeling that I'm experiencing, and it will pass if I give it enough time. I love that thought. So there's an exercise that I work with my clients on so that they can learn to master the process of allowing these uncomfortable emotions or allowing these cravings and urges. Again, you can use this with any emotion, anger, hostility, irritation, but today I want to look at it and how it applies to urges and cravings for foods that don't serve us. So if you think about an expert, somebody who's an expert in doing something really, really hard or scary things or life or death things, they become intimately knowledgeable with their area of expertise, right? So if you think about a Green Beret or a Navy SEAL, they do very scary things, right? They do physically challenging things and mentally challenging things. They are at the top of the top for combat operations. But they didn't get to be a combat expert by watching a few YouTube videos, right? They studied combat for years. They studied war tactics for years. They know the intricacies of strategy and war strategy. They had a natural curiosity for the strategy of war. They asked questions about what happens next or what are other options or what would have happened if another option would be taken. That's how they became the experts. They studied it, they looked at it from all different angles, and that's how they got to be the top of the game there. Or if you think of a neurosurgeon doesn't become a neurosurgeon because they read a couple books in medicine and decide they'll go and cut on the brain, right? They studied the physiology of the brain. They studied the anatomy of the brain. They studied the tools of the trade, the scalpels that they use, the cautery instruments they use, the, you know, different retractors that they use. They studied what worked and what didn't work. They watched other neurosurgeons, successful neurosurgeons, for years. I think the neurosurgery residency is a 6-year residency. They did 6 years of watching other experts in that field do their job. after their 4 years of learning the anatomy and physiology of all of it. They asked questions, they studied outcomes, they looked for subtle changes in their techniques, and they honed their specific approach to get the results they wanted from their surgeries. That's how they became a neurosurgeon, an expert in neurosurgery. So I teach a similar process when we're trying to deal with urges and cravings. So you might want to write some of these down. There's a lot of questions here. You might want to write them down so you can practice them the next time you have an urge or a craving. So first, you determine whether it's hunger, true hunger, or an urge or a craving. Second, I ask myself, will baked chicken and broccoli suffice? Third, I describe it. So this is, you know, what color would I assign this feeling? Is it hot or is it cold? Is it hard or is it soft? Where is it at in my body? Is it fluffy? Is it jagged? Is it sharp? All of these are descriptive words. And it seems silly and woo-woo, but it's really you trying to figure out exactly what this is in your body, what is truly being experienced by your body. And then you think about what it feels like to resist it. Then I think about what it feels like to avoid it. Then I try to determine what thoughts are prompting these urges and cravings. Once I identify a couple thoughts, I think about how I might be able to shift those thoughts slightly so that the feeling that those thoughts give me is not an urge or a craving for chocolate cake. Sometimes I think of the different results I might have with the new thoughts. So I'm going to run through this with an example for you guys today. My example today is chocolate cake. One of my sons actually had a birthday today, and there was cake, and there were a bunch of kids, and I'll be honest, the cake looked pretty good. I didn't put the cake on plan, but halfway through the party, as I'm cutting cake and serving ice cream, my brain was certainly offering me this as an option. So I'm going to walk through these steps. Number one, determine if it's hunger, if it's true hunger, or an urge or craving. So my hunger is always associated with tummy growling. It never happens 2 hours after I've eaten, and in this case, I had eaten 2 hours, a pretty robust meal 2 hours prior, and in fact, I knew there was still food in my tummy, so I knew it wasn't true hunger. So the second question, would a baked chicken and broccoli suffice? Absolutely not. In fact, when I think about eating, when I thought in the moment about eating baked chicken and broccoli, it actually almost made me nauseous. Why? Because I was still full from the meal I'd eaten 2 hours earlier. So I knew it wasn't true hunger. So then I described it. For me, the urge was pink and brown in color. It's warm in temperature. It's soft. I feel it in my tummy. It's fluffy. Those are the words that I assign to the urge for chocolate cake. And then I thought about what it feels like when I resist these types of urges. When I just resist it and white knuckle it, that feeling is frustrated and annoyed to me. And typically almost a growing tension is the feeling that I experience when I resist it. Then I thought about what it felt like to avoid it, and I realized that, interestingly, avoiding these things leads me to feel frenzied. I do all of these other things to avoid the sensation, cleaning, listening to podcasts, watching a movie, but my brain keeps trying to take me back to offering me this chocolate cake, and it builds this kind of whirlwind of thoughts in my brain that I find overwhelming, and then, you know, comes in the compromises and the justification. And for me, that whirlwind has almost always led me to break down and just eat whatever my urge was. Then I think about the thoughts that I had that prompted the urging. So the thoughts that I had that prompted the urging of the chocolate cake was, one, everybody was having fun. My parents were there. My in-laws were there. Everybody was eating cake. The cake looked pretty good. But two, there are a bunch of kids at my house. Can I have a drink? Can I have chocolate ice cream? Can I have vanilla ice cream? I need a fork. I need this. I need that. It was chaos. And that really makes me feel overwhelmed a lot. So I think my thought was probably, gosh, there's a ton of chaos here. I'm super overwhelmed. I think chocolate cake would help. Then I thought about how might I be able to shift that thought a little bit to drive a feeling that was different from having an urge to eat the chocolate cake. For me, what I thought about is, of course, when you have a nine-year-old's birthday party, of course, you're going to have a bunch of kids at your house and there's going to be some chaos. Be patient. It's going to pass. That was kind of the shift in the, oh my God, this is chaos. Everybody's asking me for something. Initial thought that led me to have the urge for chocolate cake. And then lastly, I thought about the different results that I would have with this new thought, or I've at least acknowledged and looked at these new thoughts because I've done this exercise a number of times. And of course, the result I got from kind of shifting my thought just slightly was the urge peaked. It became pretty intense. I recognized it for what it was. I just allowed it to be there. And now it's passing and much less intense, and I'm fine. And I didn't eat the chocolate cake. So, but you have to spend some time on these questions initially, right? This isn't the first time I've done this exercise. I've done it 100 times on 100 different cravings. You won't always have to do this with every single craving, because once you've practiced it enough, you just know, oh, this is that time that I want to eat birthday cake. I know that it feels warm in my tummy. It's pink and brown. I know it's soft and fluffy. I know that when I resist this, it makes me anxious and frustrated. I know when I avoid it, I get this frenzy of thoughts in my brain, which usually leads me to eating the cake. It's okay for me to just allow it. It's okay for me to recognize that this is just one of those times where my brain offers me something that doesn't serve my body. So people who know how to process their urges and cravings for food that don't serve them have become an expert. They intimately know their urges and their cravings. Figuring out what thoughts lead to these urges, of course, is important, because then you can learn to cut them off at the pass and recognize, oh, this is the time that I think that thought that doesn't really serve me. I'm going to take a different approach. Because here's the deal. You're going to come up across these urges and these cravings again and again and again. I guarantee it. So that's all I have for you guys this week. I want you to try this out. It takes some practice and it's kind of awkward at first, but trust me on this. When you can start to really break this down and look at what it truly is, this is the key to just allowing the urge for what doesn't serve your body, for what makes you sick, to just go ahead and pass. I don't need it. It's okay. Try it out. Let me know what you think, and I'll talk to you next time. Bye. Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe and share with your friends and family. Also, leave me a review. If you want to resolve your diabetes naturally without any pills or injections, I can help you. Visit DelaineMD.com for more information. Click on the Work With Me tab, send me a message, and we can set up a mini coaching session. You guys have a great week. I'll talk to you soon.